Welcome to Idle Chatter, brought to you by the Machinery Digest, where steel and soil meet. A weekly podcast by a New Jersey farmer to all farmers and ranchers across this great nation. And yes, there are farms in New Jersey. Regardless of the crop you grow or the livestock you raise, we all have one thing in common. Agriculture runs on passion, sweat, tears, and machinery. And that is why the Machinery Digest exists. A no-nonsense, grease-under-your-fingernails educational website. It was created to provide a transfer of knowledge so that you can maintain, service, and most importantly, understand today's complex farm equipment. My name is Ray Bohax, and I farm too. It is time now to get under the sheet metal. Hello and welcome to Idle Chatter. I'm Ray Bohax, your host, coming to you from Cat Swamp Road in Warren County, New Jersey. And hopefully the sound of my voice has you doing well today. And sadly, I think a lot of you may be waiting to get into the field as I am. So since last week's show, I did get a chance to burn off my cover crop. And since I recorded last week's show, and I got that down, and I got my broadcast fertilizer down, which is a agro-liquid mix. It is 20 gallons per acre of high-energy N, 10 gallons per acre of 32% N, so that would come available sooner than the high-energy. And then I have some carbon, the agro-liquid's carbon product in there. And I think I have something else. I don't recall. I should know that, right? I think I have a little bit of, not boron. I honestly don't remember. So, but I got that down with my burn down on the one field. And that's a good thing I did that on last Tuesday. I think I did that. And because it's been raining ever since. And it's been cold. So the calendar says May. But this morning I went out with two sweatshirts and a knit hat on, and it was 39 degrees, and just the past 2 days we got to, looked at the rain gauge just before I came down to record this show, and since Saturday morning we're at 2.19 inches of rain, and last week we got about almost 3 inches of rain collectively over about 4 days, so it's kind of wet out there. And because it's been cold, my cover crop's not, you know, giving up the ghost as quickly as possible because no sun and no temperature. But that is it. What more can we do? I know that plenty of people are suffering the same fate, and I'm not 100% nervous yet, but I am getting there. And a matter of fact, just the other day, I was talking to a friend of mine who lives out west, and I was saying this is the first time that I'm thinking of having some prevented plant acres. So we'll see what happens. But if I could get at least my first planting in by May 25th, that should be okay. But we'll see. It's up to the good Lord, right? Whatever it is, it is. But, you know, as we all know, this time of year, things could change very, very quickly. The rain could shut off and we could get some warm weather, and some sun in the field would dry out sufficiently enough for me to plant. I know some guys did get some corn in, and they went in there when the field was a little bit too wet, so hopefully, God willing, that they don't have a lot of sidewall compaction and a lot of compacted ground there, but we'll see what happens. So there's a little bit of corn up in the area, not much, and hey, what more can we say? Hopefully, God willing, next week we all have a singing a different story, a different tune. But well, I want to welcome you again to my show, and I want to thank you so much for everyone that is listening. And I'm very grateful and blessed to say that the audience grows every week, and I'm humbled by that, that you're listening to this dry land farmer with wet fields, right? But this week's show, what I'm going to talk about, even though the weather doesn't kind of lend itself to it, is I want to talk about the need to properly service the air conditioning system in all of your equipment. And I say equipment because that means not only your farm equipment, but your cars and your trucks also. And as I've said so many times before, on this show is that I look at every vehicle, every piece of machinery that you have on the farm, even if it's your personal vehicle, as part of a farm vehicle, because ultimately the income from the farm is paying for that, and that vehicle or that machine is used for the farm. So I put that all together as far as one unit is concerned. And if there is an aspect of equipment that most people neglect, and that is the air conditioning system, and they don't realize that, like everything else, it needs to be serviced. Now, what I mean by saying is, I get into this show this morning, is what needs to be, I'm saying this morning, I'm actually recording it in the afternoon, but I don't know why I said that for. I was supposed to do it this morning, so hey, best laid plans of mice and men, right? That never works out, that's farming. So, but the need to service this equipment usually escapes people, and not until they have a problem, and historically usually that problem is catastrophic and they have a complete system failure, do they realize that we should have taken better care of it. And sadly, a lot of people at that particular point don't even realize that the failure that they had most likely could have been avoided. And on that particular note, that is, you know, really the crux and the basis of this whole Idle Chatter show and my farmmachinerydigest.com website, is that, you know, things do break. I'm not going to deny that, and things do wear out. But from my years of being in the business, that most of the time, everything, the things that fail or break have, and not all the time, most of the time, have a shortened life because either a lack of service or a lack of knowledge or a lack of understanding. And that's what I am trying to do with this show. And I want you, as my listeners, to look at your farm collectively and realize that if you can avoid a failure, or you could avoid a problem, that's just as good as getting more revenue for your crop. And it's, I always say this, it's not what you generate, it's what you keep that is going to impact whether you are profitable or not. And I am well convinced, and no one could tell me otherwise, that it is impossible for you to have a truly profitable, on a continuous basis, agricultural operation without paying a lot of attention to your equipment and minimizing the downtime and minimizing repairs, and especially unnecessary repairs. And I've said, as I've said before, and I will say it subsequently from time to time, hopefully not every week, but subsequently, is that, you know, our whole business is based upon is based upon yield. Well, if I put a fungicide, how much can I get? If I do this, how much I get? If I put a foliar application, if I put in furrow treatment, what can I get from it? Nothing that I talk about on this show will increase your revenue stream. What it will do is minimize your expenses. So, and that's just, and so, and, you know, we have to look at it that way, is that you have your revenue stream, and then you have to minimize your expenses. And if you can minimize your expenses, it's just as effective to your profitability as an increased revenue stream. And if you have an increased revenue stream, and you increase your expenses, then it negates that increased income. So you have to look at it where it's a double-sided sword, is that you have to optimize not only what you're generating, but you have to minimize your costs. And that's what happens in the farm shop, is that, you know, people think that, well, things just break. And as I said, sometimes they just do. But don't look at it as bad luck, like 60-mile-an-hour winds or straight-line winds or a hailstorm, is that there is a very good possibility that you could have done some things over the life of that piece of equipment that has minimized or prevented the failure you have today. And that's really going to be part of my special delivery segment, because I'm going to talk about that in special delivery. And it's going to be a little bit different today. is that it's not a particular letter from a person, but it is from a person that follows me on Twitter, and I don't honestly know whether they listen to the show or not. They may or they may not, but they had a problem with their personal vehicle, and that's going to be a $7,000 or $8,000 repair. And you know, with tight markets, and if you're living predominantly off the income of the farm and unnecessary or unavoidables, for better, more accurate term, $7,000 or $8,000 repair, that could have gone a long way of paying your fertility bill or your fuel bill or anything, paying down, I mean, better than just repairing a personal vehicle that your family needs. So we're going to get into that later on. But today, as I said, we're going to be talking about air conditioning. And, you know, years back, air conditioning was a luxury in both a vehicle and in a piece of farm equipment. But today, it's really not a luxury anymore. It's probably akin to almost like a heater, is that you need to have air conditioning because of the amount of hours, the size of the farms that we're running, the amount of hours spent in the piece of equipment, and also with a closed-in cab, a weatherproof cab, you don't you really need to have some sort of climate control system. Specifically, I mean, in the winter, obviously, you need a heater, and in the summer, you need to try to eliminate that greenhouse effect. Even in the combine, when you're harvesting in the fall, or if guys are wheat guys, obviously you're harvesting when it's real hot out there, and you just don't have the airflow. It's almost like a modern office building that the windows don't open on. So climate control, and we spoke about heating during the winter season, so now we're going to talk about air conditioning systems and what you need to do to minimize the repairs and maximize its efficiency. So I'm going to ask you a question now, and be honest, obviously I can't hear you or see your hands going up, is that when was the last time that you serviced one of your air conditioning systems in any piece of equipment? And I don't mean if it has a filter in it, a cabin air filter, or tightened the belt or cleaned off the condenser. But what I'm talking about servicing is that you removed all the old refrigerant, pulled a vacuum on that system, added new refrigerant and also refrigerant oil in it, up to its level. So when was the last time you did that? And I would have to say probably the majority of you will say that you have never done it. And your qualifier is that it's still blowing cold. And I'm saying, well, it's still blowing cold today. And that's like a person who doesn't really brush their teeth or take care of their dental hygiene. Well, your teeth are in your mouth today. They may not be in your mouth tomorrow. And what we want to do is we want to avoid that because, number one, as we were saying a minute or so ago, is that it's so paramount to have air conditioning in today's farm equipment because of the sun load in there and the lack of natural airflow with a closed cab. And also is that once it breaks usually very expensively. So it's not inexpensive to fix a air conditioning system because usually when there's a failure, the failure is catastrophic. So let's get into that and talk about it. Now, in essence, let me give you a little bit of background, is that as far as air conditioning is concerned, it uses a refrigerant. And people use the term Freon, and Freon is actually was a brand name like Kleenex or Jeep or Frigidaire. Old timers used to say, I got a new Frigidaire, meaning a new refrigerator. So Freon, I believe, was a trade name of the DuPont Corporation, but the proper name of the chemical inside an air conditioning system is the refrigerant, and there's all different specifications of refrigerant. And years back, the systems used to use what is called R12. And R12 was an automotive style refrigerant, and that is a different type of refrigerant that is traditionally used in a home air conditioner system or a refrigerator for your food or a chiller or an ice box, a freezer itself, right? I'm showing my age, ice box, right? So a freezer, but automotive type of applications. And what you will find in agriculture is qualified as an automotive application, is that it was R12. And then about probably 15 to 20 years ago, time flies by, that the R12 was replaced with a product called R134A, and I believe that some newer equipment and some newer automobiles have a different refrigerant than that now. And the reason why it was replaced, R12 was replaced with 134A, is that the new product, the 134A, was more environmentally friendly. It did not attack the ozone layer as aggressively as R12 did. So if the system was leaking and putting refrigerant into the air, or if the vehicle got into an accident, or on a piece of farm equipment, you popped a hole, you blew an air conditioner line, or you popped a hole in the condenser, and the refrigerant leaked into the air, that the R134A is not as aggressive in the environment as the older stuff was. Right, so that is our basis there. Now, what happens is that an air conditioner has, I'm going to make this very simple, an AC system has a number of components. There's the compressor, which is basically a small engine, and it without any fuel in it, it's belt driven from the crankshaft of the engine that is powering the vehicle. And there's a compressor, and that actually, depending upon the style of compressor that it is, if anybody remembers the old, let's say, Chrysler compressors, they call them V2 compressors, and Eaton, I had the same style compressor, that looked like a Harley Davidson motorcycle, and whereas, so that had two pistons and a crankshaft, and it has valves in it, just like an engine had, and like an engine has, and that would compress the refrigerant. And General Motors years ago used an axial type of compressor, which was a six-cylinder axial. It was called an A6. This is those big, long AC Delco actually, they were Frigidaire compressors back then in the 60s and 70s, and they were an axial type of compressor, and then later on they had some rotary compressors, but regardless, it is like a small engine, so it's akin to a small engine. And most of the systems today use an axial type of compressor. So, but if the efficiencies, what basically has happened, let me just back up so I have some continuity in my thoughts for you, is that one of the reasons why they changed the compressor designs is to make them smaller, make them more efficient, and they like anything else, they got better at it. And it's evolutionary. They make them smaller, more efficient. They take less power. They're more efficient as far as what I mean is that they're more efficient in compressing the refrigerant, and they're also run with less noise, vibration, and harshness. And the thing is that whenever you put, as an aside to this, whenever you put some sort of load like that on an engine to turn it, you want to try to have it as on the same plane as the crankshaft. So when you move it from to a different crank plane from the crankshaft, then you induce more harmonics, and it has more vibration is induced. So you want to have it the shortest belt possible, and you want to have it as close to the crankshaft as possible. That doesn't always happen, but years ago when they had the big V-shaped compressors, for instance, and Chrysler was famous for them, they had them way up high, and they were far away from the crankshaft, and they had a lot of harmonics to them, and so it would feel a change in the engine's idle when the air conditioner compressor was engaged, and that was because it was not on the same plane of the crankshaft. And if you look later on, as vehicles progressed, is that they tried to package that in most modern applications, even on agricultural piece of equipment, you'll see that compressor is usually nearest or on the same plane, the same level, lined up with the crankshaft. In every application, that cannot happen, but that's the ideal goal. And in engineering, you look to package everything, and you can't always package it the way you want, but the ideal goal is to always put a load next on the same plane as the crankshaft. So think of it this way. without belaboring it, if you look at like at a PTO shaft, you want to have try to have that PTO shaft coming out of a tractor, let's say to that disc bind. You want to have that PTO shaft come and you want it to run straight, a minimum of a one or two, a maximum of a 1 or 2 degree angle. Because if you have it on a steeper angle than that, then actually the PTO shaft will swing in an ellipse and cause vibration. That's when you get that vibration, is because it's actually swinging in an ellipse, which is like an O, which is looks shaped like an egg. Its rotation is not a complete, is not a perfect circle. And that is why a lot of equipment today actually employ what they call a constant velocity joint in like a PTO or in an axle on a drive system, because that gives the engineer more flexibility as far as its placement is concerned, because when that shaft spins in an ellipse, then it's accelerating and decelerating, and that's why you're getting that harmonic or that vibration. Whereas constant velocity joint means that it is rotating at a constant velocity. The PTO is spinning at the same RPM, but the shaft, when it's on an angle, when it has a universal joint, actually when it goes into the ellipse, accelerates and decelerates, whereas a constant velocity joint usually has balls and is able to keep the speed, the input speed, which is the drive from the PTO, and the output speed the same. And there's not that variation. And on the same token, if you know, it's apples and oranges, but if you could keep that compressor on the same plane of the crankshaft with as short a belt as possible, then what you are doing is you are keeping that RPM of the compressor is constant, and you're keeping that harmonic, that operation, that pumping action of that compressor in line with the crankshaft, and it becomes much smoother. And that's important also, because the compressor has a crankshaft and it has bearings, and the least amount of harmonics that are introduced into that compressor will not only be have a smoother operation in the vehicle, whether a tractor or a pickup truck or what have you, and less harmonics, but you will also not be transferring those harmonics into the shaft, the crankshaft, and the bearings of the air conditioner compressor. So we have the compressor, we have what is called a condenser, and the condenser is basically going to be out in front of the vehicle or the piece of equipment to get airflow across it. And then we have inside the vehicle, inside the cab or the passenger compartment, we'll have an evaporator, and then we will have a system of hoses, and there will be some sort of valve to control the flow of the refrigerant into the evaporator. And an air conditioner compressor, being a pump, an engine with a pump, it has what's called a low side and a high side. And if you look at the air conditioning system, that you, if you notice, you'll have two sets of hoses. You'll have a hose that is has a greater diameter, and you'll have a hose that has a thinner diameter. The thinner diameter of the hose, or the smaller of the hoses, I will say, is the liquid line, and that is considered the high side. That's when the refrigerant is actually a liquid. And then you'll have the bigger hose, which is called the low side or the suction side. So they call the high side, lots of times it'll be referred to as the pressure side, and then the low side of the system will be referred to as the suction side, or vacuum. Some people call it the vacuum side. It's really not a vacuum side, but sometimes they'll refer to it as that. And then you'll have your refrigerant, and then inside the compressor you will have a lubricating oil, a special lubricating oil in there that works to keep everything spinning without seizing. So now that we have those basics covered, let's talk about what needs to be done. Now, the air conditioning system has a bunch of seals on it, and they're traditionally O-rings, and they'll seal any connection, and the hoses, for the most part, are a series of a type of rubber hose, and they usually have some aluminum piping connected to them, and it'll be aluminum or metal type of piping. It's more of aluminum, and then with rubber hose in between. That'll be on the low pressure and on the high pressure side. The take home message that you need to understand here is that just like an engine or a hydraulic system, is that the refrigerant where an engine or hydraulic system would be the oil, but the refrigerant inside the air conditioning system becomes dirty. And how does it become dirty? It has a tendency over time to wick in moisture and absorb moisture into the refrigerant. Now, an interesting thing happens is that when the refrigerant, be it R12, R134A, or with your home air conditioning system, which I think that may be R22, is that when the refrigerant mixes with a small level of moisture, a small amount of moisture, it creates acid. And then this acid, over time, deteriorates and eats everything in the system. So the acid actually also mixes, so the moisture mixes with the refrigerant and becomes acid, and the moisture also mixes with the oil in the lubricating system and becomes sludge. So it would be like an engine that has a faulty breather in it, and you get a sludge build up in the oil pan, the valve covers, the breather, what have you. So that is what is going to occur. Now, when you put the acid, when the acid gets into the system, as I said, it starts to eat everything and deteriorate it, and then the sludge ends up offering a lack of lubrication to the actual compressor. So now we're basically, in essence, pumping acid through the entire system, or an acid-based, or an acid, I should say, influenced refrigerant, and it's attacking everything and eating it and destroying it. And then we also at the same time have that sludge forming in the crankcase of the compressor and offering a lack of lubricity to all of the moving parts inside the compressor. So how does this moisture get into the system? As to elaborate upon what I was just saying, is that the moisture gets in there because of the seals become porous over time, and then also the hoses become porous over time, and then there is such a pressure differential between the high and the low side and the atmosphere that even though a newer system today, the sealing technology is so much better, but over the course of 3, 4, 5 years and so many thermal excursions, heating and cooling effects, heating and cooling underneath the hood, is that the system starts to wick in a little bit of moisture. And that doesn't mean that there's a refrigerant leak, but there is going to be. It's just like a tire. You could have a perfectly sealed tire on a rim, and you could put 30 pounds of air in it, and then you could come back maybe a year from now and it'll have 29 pounds of air, and another year from now it'll have 28 pounds of air. So there's always is going to be some inherent leakage from the air conditioning system. It is so minute that it really doesn't affect the performance, but every time that some refrigerant exits the system, some moisture is wicked in. Now, so what do we need to do very simply to eliminate this moisture is that the system needs to be serviced. And there are three parts to this service procedure, and you do need a special piece of equipment called an air conditioning recovery and charging station. Now, years ago, when we used to service air conditioners, we used to let the refrigerant go into the atmosphere. For the past 20 or 25 years, that is no longer, you're no longer legally able to do that. To legally service air conditioning, we need to have what is called a recovery machine. And this recovery machine takes the old refrigerant out of the system and stores it in a tank. It looks like a barbecue grill tank and stores it in the tank. And then what it does is that it traditionally runs that refrigerant through a filter and through a desiccant. A desiccant is something that absorbs moisture, and it recycles that, and then it is able to be put back into the system as cleaned and sans any moisture. So the steps basically are that the system needs to be discharged, and discharge means that all of the refrigerant is going to be removed from the system. So we're going to take this refrigerant, we're going to hook up this machine, and we're going to take all of the freon out, and it's going to go into the storage tank. Now, the next step is that once there is no refrigerant in the system, the air conditioner charging station or the air conditioning service station. We used to call it a charging station before because it only used to it used to charge and not recover the fan, so we'll call it the air conditioner servicing machine or equipment. They probably have some name for it now. I still call it a charging station. What it does is it is equipped with a vacuum pump. And now, once all of the old refrigerant is out, you're going to have the vacuum pump. The lines will be hooked up to the low side and the high side, and this vacuum pump is going to run. And you want to get the system down to 28 inches of mercury. So you want to have a very strong vacuum, a very low pressure area in there. And why you're doing that is that moisture, water will boil at 28 inches of vacuum. It will boil at 28 inches of vacuum at 54 degrees Fahrenheit. So you're using the vacuum, the low atmospheric pressure that you're inducing through this vacuum pump into the air conditioner system, 28 inches, all right, of vacuum, 28 inches of mercury in there to boil off the water. Now, depending upon the size of the system, all right, if it's a big bus, then it's going to be have more refrigerant, and the system is going to have more piping and length to it. Then versus a small car. But regardless of it, you want to get it down to 28 inches. And once it gets down to 28 inches of mercury, you want to keep that, maintain that for 1 hour. So you have now no refrigerant in the system, and you're inducing a vacuum. You're taking in boiling all of the moisture out. And the industry has found that if you get it down to 28 inches and maintain the 28 inches for an hour, that you will remove all of the moisture. You will boil off all of the moisture, and the vacuum pump will actually be sucking the steam out of the system. Now, as an aside to that, it's very important for you to understand that depending upon how moisture laden the system is and how large it is will determine how long it takes to get down to 28 inches of vacuum. Now, if you go and if you have a lot of moisture in this system, then it may take a half hour for it to pump down to 28 inches, and then that's when the clock starts for 1 hour to boil off the moisture, the humidity inside. If you have a system that has very little moisture in it and is not too large, it may get down to 28 inches within 5 minutes. And this is where a good mechanic, a good technician that is servicing air conditioning will look at that and watch the gauge and not just say, okay, I put it on there, and he puts it on for a half hour and it may only be down to 14 inches, and then you did not remove all of the moisture from that system. So you remove some of it, but not all of it. And once it gets down to that level, and you feel that it's maintained it for an hour, you now shut off the vacuum pump, and the machine will put in the proper amount of refrigerant. Every application, someplace on that piece of equipment or underneath that hood or what have you, or on the heater box, will be a decal with a specification. And if you don't have that, then you could go and you could look that up in a shop menu, what have you. So it may say this system takes 3.08 pounds of refrigerant. And then the charging station, the charging machine, has a scale on there, and you're able to set it for 3.08 pounds or 3 pounds, 2 ounces, 1 pound, 5 ounces, whatever it may be. And then at that particular point, it'll put the Freon in, I'm using that term, right, the refrigerant in, and you will tell it how much oil to put in. There'll be a separate canister that has refrigerant oil. So now the thing is that on the most modern systems, you cannot check the oil on the compressor, which is a bit of an issue and a bit of a problem. The thing is that if the compressor has no sign of leakage, there's no oil on it, then usually the rule of thumb would be to put about an ounce of oil in when you put the refrigerant back in. And as the older compressors, years ago, like the old Chrysler V2s, when you actually and Eaton made them, and BorgWarner made the same type of compressor. So if you have an older piece of farm equipment, you may have this big V2 compressor. When the system was discharged and you took the refrigerant out before you pulled the vacuum, they actually had a port, and they had a special dipstick that you could buy, and you would, it looked like a pipe plug. You'd move the pipe plug, and then you would put the dipstick in, and you'd read the oil level, and then you'd put the pipe, and you would record that, and then you would put the pipe plug back in, and then you would pull your vacuum on the system, and then you knew that, okay, this system, it needs, it's down 1 ounce of oil, it's down 3/4 of an ounce of oil, it's down 2 ounces of oil, what have you. But keep in mind that these systems only take the amount of oil in a few ounces. There's not a lot of oil in there. That the oil goes a long way. It's not like an engine where you need to have 4 quarts of oil. So there's very little oil, but that oil is paramount to keeping that system, that compressor working. So now you put your oil in with your refrigerant, and historically the charging station will put the oil in that you programmed the amount of oil in first, while the system is still under vacuum, so it'll be easily pushed in, and then it will introduce the proper amount of refrigerant, and once it has that proper amount of refrigerant, you are done. Right? That system is serviced. Now, as in backing up a little bit, I want to talk about the common things that fail in an air conditioner system because of a lack of service. All right? So we spoke about the acid, but what does the acid do? The acid attacks the O-rings, as I said, it attacks the crankshaft, it attacks all moving parts, but the most paramount thing that it attacks is the desiccant. And I did not discuss this. When you look at any air conditioning system, you're going to see that there's in some place in it, attached to one of the hoses, is going to be a canister. And that canister holds a desiccant. Now, years ago, on the older systems, so if you have an older tractor or an older combine or haybine, what have you, is that it had a expansion valve. And what the expansion valve does is controls the amount of refrigerant entering the evaporator. And if you did not control the amount of refrigerant entering the evaporator would ice up and would no longer function and cool. Now, on the older systems, they used an expansion valve. And General Motors invented in the late 1970s a system with what is called an orifice tube. The expansion valve had moving parts in it, and you'll find some equipment, older equipment, that will still have an expansion valve, but the past 30 years or so, most systems used an orifice tube. Now, what makes it confusing is that the orifice tube looks is about four inches long and has a screen in it, and this orifice tube actually goes and controls the amount of refrigerant to the evaporator. But what I want to just break away for a second is that when you had an expansion valve system, historically, probably 99% of the time, this canister that I was talking about that was usually near the expansion valve was called a receiver dryer. And the receiver dryer was always on the high pressure side, the liquid side of the system. And the receiver dryer would have a desiccant bag in it. And what the desiccant bag looked like, it was almost like those little salt crystals that when you buy a piece of electronics, and they would absorb the moisture in the system. And then if you do not service the system, the acid will eat that desiccant bag and put all of those little crystals through the entire system, and historically it will plug the expansion valve and it will put this abrasive media through the compressor, and the compressor itself will usually seize or actually, like say, blow up, throw a connecting rod through it. Now, on an orifice valve system, the orifice valve is on the low pressure side and the desiccant is not in the receiver dryer, it's called an accumulator. But the function is the same. The desiccant bag is there to absorb moisture. So on a older system with a expansion valve, the desiccant would be on the liquid side, the high pressure side. On a newer system with an orifice valve, and I say new, probably the past 25 or 30 years, it'll be on the low pressure side, and it'll be called an accumulator. So if you're going to buy a part, an accumulator is on the low pressure side and has the desiccant in it. On an older system with an expansion valve, the receiver dryer holds the desiccant and it is on the high pressure side. Now, the important thing for you to understand is that if you have any air conditioning system, whether, and this is a common problem that happens, is that let's say you popped a hole in the condenser, and the most common area for you to get a leak is in the condenser, simply put, because that is right out in front of the vehicle or front of the tractor, and that system is open, and it's open for any amount of time. All right, so what I mean, It shouldn't be open for 5 minutes, but if it's open, so if you pop a hole in, you pop a hole in the winter, you don't realize it, and it's open for any amount of time, is that desiccant bag is shot, and that system is full of moisture. That desiccant bag is shot. So whenever you have a system that is open, or a car or a truck that was in a collision, that it is imperative that receiver dryer or that accumulator, depending upon what system it is changed and has a new desiccant in it, because that's going to wicken the moisture almost immediately. And that is why they tell you when you service an air conditioner, if you're replacing a part, that you have to, oh, let's say if you replace a condenser or you have a seal, you cannot leave that system open. And every place you go into a farm repair shop, at a tractor dealer, or you go to an auto body shop or an auto repair shop, they leave that system open and that desiccant is shot. So even though they put that, let's say, put a new condenser in, they charged it up and they did everything that they needed to do, that desiccant became so full of moisture that it's not, even though you took the moisture out through the boiling process with the vacuum, is that desiccant is going to serve no purpose whatsoever and is going to hold some moisture and is going to pollute that new refrigerant. So a good mechanic will always say, is when they have a system that either popped the hose, popped the condenser, the compressor, whatever, is that you need to replace that desiccant with that, and you can't just buy the bag. It's going to be either in the receiver dryer or the accumulator based upon the type of system it has. Now, when should you do all of this service? Well, first of all, number one is that to properly service an air conditioner with the recovery station, you need to make an investment of about $3,000 or $4,000. And I think that most of you will not feel that that's a prudent investment unless you have a lot of equipment, and or that you co-op that with another couple of other farmers, because it's not a piece of machinery that you're going to use all the time. So the thing is that what you would do is you would go and you would have this done as a service at your either the equipment dealer, or the car dealer, depending upon whether it's a car or not. So I like to tell people that if the system is performing well and has a good cold discharge temperature, every 4 to 5 years that you will want to do this service, which is a discharge evacuation and refill with the proper amount of refrigerant and oil. So if you do that every 4 or 5 years, then you will keep that system fresh, and most likely that system will last the entire life of that piece of equipment with minimal to no service. Now, the other thing is that if you do not do that and you wait for something to fail, usually it fails catastrophically. and it could very easily cost you $3,000-$5,000 to fix that air conditioner. As I always say, you don't look at that as crop prices. How much crop are you giving away? I would much rather spend a couple of hundred dollars on each piece of equipment every 4 or 5 years to service the air conditioner system properly and not have it fail. Now, another thing, I did a show a week or two ago about letting the heat out of the engine compartment. And it's very important for you to do this, and it's also very important for you to pay attention to any signs of any oil leaks inside the engine compartment, especially around the AC hoses. Now, as the AC, if what happens to hoses, AC lines, is over time, they become porous. And especially on the high pressure side, and then you will have a system that leaks refrigerant, but you cannot find that leak. You could put a dye in it, you could go with a refrigerant detector, which is like a Geiger counter. You run the system and you run it, it's a sniffer, and it goes along, you go along by the hoses, by the seals, and it goes beep 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 when it finds a leak, right? But the fact of the matter is that when you get a hose that is older, it becomes porous. And so on the high pressure side, it may not leak. It may not leak at 200 pounds of pressure, but at 210 it starts to push through the hose. And that is usually an indication of a leak that is pressure induced. And what happens is that your system will be low on Freon, refrigerant, it won't run, it won't engage, and they shoot some refrigerant into it and they can't find the leak. Well, they can't find the leak because the high side pressure did not get high enough. And the high side pressure is going to be influenced by the underhood temperature, the ambient temperature, and the amount of humidity in the air. On a hot day harvesting wheat in the combine, is that high side pressure is going to be elevated versus a 70 degree day or an 80 degree day and lower underhood temperature on that piece of equipment. So that is something that kicks a lot of people's tushy, because they go and they say they can't find the leak and the system leaks Freon over time. You put refrigerant in and then it comes in with a week or so or 2 weeks, the system is now blowing hot air. So it's important for you to keep that in mind. So let's recap now as we get into this. Very simply, I ran you around all over the place, but I want you to know the importance of servicing your air conditioner. So what you're basically going to do, what it's going to encompass, it's going to be removing the old refrigerant, it's going to be that's called discharge, then it's going to be called evacuation, there's going to be a vacuum pump hooked up to the system. The purpose of the vacuum pump being hooked up to the system is to go and boil off all of the moisture, because water will boil at 28 inches of vacuum at 54 degrees Fahrenheit instead of 212 degrees. You're going to get the system down to 28 inches of mercury, and then you're going to maintain that for 1 hour. Once you maintain that for 1 hour, you're going to shut off the vacuum pump, and this machine is now going to go into what's called the charge cycle, and it's going to put the proper amount of refrigerant and the proper amount of refrigerant oil back into the system. All right? So if you do this, it's probably a good hour and a half procedure, because usually the hoses are fairly easy to hook up the low pressure and high pressure side. Recapping, the high pressure is the thinner line, the liquid line. The low pressure is the gaseous line. It's the bigger line. And it's going to fill it back up, and then you will be good to go. Obviously, if the system has a cabin air filter, you would want to check that and service that. You'd also want to clean the condenser off from any bugs or road debris or chaff, depending upon the application, so it could actually cool that high pressure side, and it could actually, otherwise you're going to end up putting a stress on the system and it's not going to be functioning efficiently. And then other than checking the belt and maybe the compressor bolts, you are good to go. Now, keep in mind that if you have a system that keeps icing up, then that means that the low pressure side, the suction side, is lower than normal, and the orifice could be blocked. And at that particular time, you will probably see the high pressure side being higher than normal. So the low pressure side will be lower and the high pressure side will be higher. But if you look, if you take readings on this and you look in the shop manual, it will give you the range for each and application of what the pressure should be, and then it'll tell you if you have a low pressure between this range, that the diagnostic routine is usually this. If you have a high pressure, this is the diagnostic routine where you need to go. The thing basically is that I've never had a failure in any piece of equipment that I had with air conditioning, never had a failure whatsoever, simply because, number one, I always open the hood, as I did a show on it a week or two ago about letting the heat out, so I don't want to cook those O-rings, I don't want to cook those hoses and make them porous, and I service my air conditioners every 3 to 5 years. There's never any sludge built up in the system, there's never any acid in the system, I don't eat the acid, doesn't eat the desiccant bag. I'm not putting the desiccant through the system, plugging the orifice tube or the expansion valve and having that abrasiveness go through and destroy the compressor. So it's very simple, and historically, most dealerships, equipment dealerships, don't charge a lot of money for this. It's usually a flat fee to hook up the machine and do it, and then there's a fee for the amount of refrigerant per pound. Now, you have semis, it's the same thing. You have a combine, it's the same thing. You have your wife's minivan, it's the same thing. So this all works the same. It's the amount of refrigerant that is in the system. But everything that I've spoke about today, if you were to do this and execute this, that you will probably have no expense in that air conditioning system in the life of that piece of equipment. And like I said, is that, you know, you have a combine today, you have a tractor, you have a sprayer, it's imperative that you have that air conditioning. And I would hate to see you get hit with a $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 repair bill for something that could have been easily avoided with a $200 or $250 service every 4 or 5 years, or 3 years, whatever. It's not where you're going to having to do this every year. Recapping also, before I go into special delivery, is that if that system is open for any length of time, I mean more than 10 minutes, all right, then you're going to need to change that desiccant, and it's either in the accumulator on a newer system with an orifice valve, or on the receiver dryer on an older system with an expansion valve. If you do not do that, you're fooling yourself. That desiccant is going to eventually deteriorate the sac that's holding it and pump all of those abrasive crystals through it. And that's very common. A guy gets this done, they don't change the desiccant, they don't change the accumulator or the receiver dryer. They have a problem, let's say, with a condenser, or they change a compressor and that system is open, it sucks in all the moisture, and then a year later the whole system grenades itself. And I don't mean it blows up and blows the hood off the vehicle, but this compressor seizes, the system doesn't work, and you spent $1,000 a year before, and now it's junk. It's like putting sand in your motor oil, right? So forget about it. So please talk to your service people. If you have a big enough operation with enough equipment and you want to invest in a piece of machinery, an air conditioner recovery recharging station, I would say co-op it with some of your friends, and you could send it around to everybody's farm and they could do all the equipment and the next couple of years do it again, or just talk to your dealership. I'm sure they would be more than happy to do that service. And the thing is that you want to talk to that, if you haven't done it at a dealership or a service center, you want to make sure that that person understands that they have to pull it down to 28 inches of mercury and they have to maintain that for 1 hour. And once it gets there, and if it takes a half hour to get there, then you're pulling that vacuum you're pulling it for an hour and a half, because you're not going to take all the moisture out. So that's it's like whatever, putting fresh oil in with a dirty filter in a motor. So I don't even know if that's a good analogy. But please, please do this. It's an important part of your equipment. When you go into harvest, you're spraying in the field, you need that air conditioner, and there's no reason for you to grenade that because of a lack of maintenance. It would be just like somebody not brushing their teeth and having to get dentures. All right, so let's just do that. All right, any questions, please feel free to contact me. at Hot Rod Farmer at farmmachinerydigest.com. So now we're going to get quickly into our special delivery segment, and special delivery is brought to you by Firestone Ag, a company founded by Harvey Firestone, a fourth-generation farmer from Columbiana, Ohio. Harvey dreamed of putting rubber tires on farm tractors, and his innovative mindset is at the core of Firestone Ag today, and lives on with their 23-degree tread bar and AD2 technology. The soil is the lifeblood of your farm. Trust it only to Firestone, and also trust it only to Firestone for your replacement tracks. If you have a track machine and you need some new tracks, definitely check out those new Firestone replacement tracks. They're at the top of the game in the industry. It's the Firestone of tracks. But anyway, what I wanted to go into today was that I had a person on Twitter that we follow each other, and as I said, I don't remember, I don't know, I have no idea whether the person listens to me or not, but he had a 2017 Suburban, and it ended up, well, he said it blew up the motor. I don't know if it really blew up the motor, but it wiped the cam out, and it had a whole bunch of issues with that, and he was quite disgruntled because I think it's going to be about an $8,000 repair. And the thing that I'm trying to take home message here is that that particular engine has what they call displacement on demand, and it shuts off cylinders through the valve train for better fuel economy on the highway. It's a modern version of the old Cadillac V8 6.4. But, you know, the take home message here is that I'm not saying that something can't fail, but I had some communications with him through my Twitter account. And I asked him what kind of oil he used, and he really didn't know. He never got back to me, and whether he always used a Delco filter. And using this just as an example is that, you know, so many times, and I did a show on this a while back early into my podcasting, and about that there is a difference in parts. And historically, when you see a failure like this, and I don't care whether it's on a piece of, on a passenger vehicle or a piece of modern farm equipment, and, you know, what I want to drive home to you is that the stuff today is so complex. There's so much design engineering in it. There's so many different aspects of it that if you do not, you know, there's a reason why, like on those GM applications, they tell you to use a Dexos, D-E-X-O-S, Dexos certified oil or approved oil. And that is a standard that GM has for, and part of it is for this valve actuation system, this displacement on demand. And also, you know, if you're not using a OE type of filter, I don't care whether it's on a farm tractor or an OE filter, and, you know, this is no knock on the aftermarket, and, you know, years ago things, and I said this before, it's a lot more forgiving, all right? It's a lot more forgiving, but today this stuff is not forgiving whatsoever. I don't care whether it's a car or whether it's a combine or whether it's a sprayer or whether it's a diesel engine on the irrigation pump, that there's so much advanced engineering and so many special materials in these engines and these hydraulic systems and different O-rings and different seals, that there's a reason why the manufacturer specifies using those particular lubricants or those particular parts. And, you know, my thing to you is that I can't say this 100%, but this particular gentleman has a 2017 Suburban, which is a $50,000-$60,000 vehicle with 83,000 miles, so obviously he uses it a lot. When I asked him what oil and what filter he added, he didn't know, so it means he's not servicing it himself, and he may very well be going to a repair shop in town. I don't know where he's going, and it's like I say, I'm not attacking that person, but there's probably a very good possibility that this system failed because of the wrong oil in it and an aftermarket filter that didn't have the filtration that was necessary for the close tolerances in this displacement on demand. I feel, you know, there's a very good chance that if he would have used a Dexos approved oil and an AC Delco filter on there, that this truck would not be broken. And if this truck needs a new engine, that's going to be $7,000 or $8,000, and that's $7,000 or $8,000 that he's going to have to take from his income, whoever he sources it from, and put it into this vehicle, and it's going to be back to square one to where it was. If it needs tires, it still needs tires. If it needs brakes, it still needs brakes. If it has a torn seat, it still has a torn seat. And remember, that is an unnecessary repair. So please, 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 You know, if you have a piece of equipment on the farm, if it's Case IH, use their parts. If it's John Deere, use their parts. Use their oils. Do all of that. It's so don't be penny wise and dollar foolish, because when it bites hard, like with the air conditioning system, and with tight margins on the farm, you do not need to have a personal vehicle blow up an engine because you saved a dollar or two on each oil change. And I'm sure this man was 100% innocent. He had good intentions. He said he always had it serviced. Well, he always had it serviced, and I'm sure the mechanic who worked on it had good intentions, and he did not see or honor or believe or whatever, it didn't register with him that there's a difference and there's a reason why you have to use the parts and the fluids and the filters that are recommended by that manufacturer. And it's a sad story when that does not happen. So listen, thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful week. I hope for next week we all got some seed in the ground and know that the Hot Rod Farmer is always pulling for you, the American farmer and rancher, and my beloved America. You have a blessed week. Take care. Bye-bye.